Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday, the feast of St. Clare of Assisi. Hope you're having a beautiful Tuesday morning so far. Lots to talk about today, including the weather. There was this quite strange and huge windstorm that blew through parts of the country yesterday, causing some severe damage. We'll have an update on that. And in terms of the show, the outline of the show, here you go, the agenda or the rundown, as we say in the biz. We've got Steve Ray coming up with us again, talking about the Feast of Our Lady, the Assumption of Mary, coming up in August, of course. And I love hearing Steve talk about this because he shares with us right from the bottom of his heart in terms of the challenges he had coming into the church, a lot of them from the church teachings on Mary. So we'll talk with him about the Assumption. And then we're also going to be chatting with our friends at Sophia Press, SophiaInstitute.com. Michael Lickens is going to be joining us on a beautiful book on another great saint whose feast day is this week, St. Maximilian Kolbe, whose feast day is Friday. And this beautiful book is, well, it's just lovely. There's all kinds of illustrations and information about the life of this great saint who did so much to spread the truth, especially about the teachings of our Blessed Mother, St. Maximilian Kolbe. His feast day is Friday, and a brand new book all about him from our friends at Sophia Press. And Michael did not write the book, but he's speaking for the author who did, and we'll talk about that with him. And then if we have some time left, I do want to mention some beautiful stories about St. Lawrence. We briefly mentioned this yesterday. I'm going to be doing my next installation of Tea Time this week about the meteor shower that's associated with this saint. It's just beautiful in terms of the tears of St. Lawrence. And supposedly there's supposed to be a lot of activity this week with meteor showers that occur in this time of August. As a matter of fact, in the first hour of my program, I was just doing an interview with John Hale from Corporate Travel and also Brother Jim Boynton, who now works at U of D High School in Detroit, used to be up way, way up at Mackinac Island. And if you're not familiar with Mackinac, it's a very historic place, not only in the history of the country, but also in the history of the Catholic Church and the missions. And there's so much going on up there. The parish, St. Anne's, not the building that they're in right now, but the parish has been around for 350 years. Isn't that amazing? And there's all kinds of influence from the different saints and, of course, the early Jesuits who were going all over the North in the Midwest in terms of spreading the faith. So just talking about the different saints and what's happening, there's so much to learn about our Catholic faith. It's just absolutely incredible. So we are going to be in Mackinac Island this week. I did want to let you know we're going to be broadcasting live on Friday morning from the Grand Hotel. And the Grand Hotel is known, the area is known for a lot of things, a movie Somewhere in Time, which was filmed there. It's now kind of like a very popular, a chick flick type of genre. But it was a lovely film that was filmed there many years ago, back in 1978, 79, came out in 1980. Also known for the fact that they don't have any cars on the island, only horse-drawn carriages, and you can hear the clippity-clop everywhere you go. And its location is very unique. It's actually in the Straits of Mackinac. So if you hold up your left hand, as I always tell you, right at the very tip, it really is directly north. So if you're going up I-75 and then you get right to Mackinac City, and then there's the Mackinac Bridge going over to the Upper Peninsula, St. Ignace, the town there, named after St. Ignatius. The Catholic influence is all over the place. Let me tell you something. And Mackinac Island sits right there in the Straits of Mackinac. And it's a beautiful location, and we wanted to do something for our Ave Maria Radio listeners, our local listeners, and offer them a getaway. And so we came up with a great package for them. We're going to share some of this with you on Friday morning, talking about the Catholic history of the island and whatnot. And it's going to be a regular broadcast, but we'll just be throwing in some beautiful Catholic history because there's so much we can learn from our faith, I think, and it's just so deep. And Steve Ray talks about that all the time, the fact that he became Catholic, and it's a never-ending well of beauty and information. So we have Steve Ray, Michael Lickens, and I was getting to the fact, and that's where I was going. I kind of wandered a bit. In northern Lower Michigan, Brother Boynton was telling me that you can really see the meteor showers. There's a particular place on the island. It's a fort that's on a hill, And because of the clarity in that part of the country, I guess the meteor showers are quite spectacular. So see if we can find a spot and get a bunch of people to join us. Amazing. All right, the creation of the Lord, plus, of course, the One Holy Catholic and Universal Catholic Church, always learning something new. Thanks for tuning in to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network on this, the feast day of a great saint, St. Clare of Assisi, the patron saint, by the way, of television. And yes, a lot of connections with St. Clare and our very own Mother Angelica. Let's see what's happening in the world. 5 minutes past the hour now. It's a Tuesday morning, August 11th. A federal court of appeals removing, as Catholic News Agency reports, an injunction blocking four Arkansas abortion regulations from going into effect. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit ruling recently to reinstate the 2017 Arkansas laws. They can take effect August 28th, although they may still face some legal challenges. The laws include a ban on abortions based solely on the sex of the baby and two regulations on the preservation and disposal of tissue from aborted babies, as well as legislation prohibiting a second trimester abortion. World leaders have pledged millions for disaster-struck Lebanon, as Nathan Morley with Vatican News explains, a support coming during an online summit aimed at helping the country.
International leaders that took part in a virtual donor conference have pledged nearly $300 million in humanitarian assistance, which will be directly delivered to the people through the United Nations, international organizations, and NGOs, but not the Lebanese government. The United Kingdom pledged $26 million, whilst the European Commission pledged $35 million. For his part, the US President, Donald Trump, said the United States would give substantial aid, but he didn't elaborate. He said on a humanitarian basis, we have to do it. Meanwhile, on the streets of Beirut, anger at the explosion is still raw. On Sunday, police fired tear gas to try and clear protesters who were blocking a road near Parliament in a second day of demonstrations. The political fallout is well underway. So far, the Justice Minister, Information Minister, and Environment Minister have all resigned.
And on Monday, protesters also called for the President to step down as well. Benedict XVI's personal secretary, Archbishop Georg Gainswein, in an interview with a German newspaper, is reported to have said that Benedict XVI's illness is subsiding and that his medication has been reduced. Benedict XVI has been suffering from facial shingles, a bacterial infection of the skin which causes a painful red rash. The pain started, Gainswein said, after the death of his brother recently. Twins born conjoined at the head who were separated at the Vatican's pediatric hospital are baptized by Pope Francis. Their mom had said she wanted her babies baptized by the Pope. The Italian news agency ANSA reporting they were baptized at Casa Santa Marta, where Pope Francis lives. In other news this morning, Michael Kastner tells us Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best now resigning after the city council there voted to defund the police department and also cut 100 jobs from the force.
Best said Monday her resignation is effective September 2nd, noting the difficult times the city has faced with protests against police brutality in the weeks following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody. The city council Monday voted 8-1 to cut jobs, funding, and the chief's salary. The one no vote was cast by a council member who didn't think the cuts went far enough. In a resignation letter, Best told her officers they work for the greatest police department in the country, and she said the vast majority of people in Seattle support and appreciate them.
In Illinois, Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox defending herself from criticism that of how she handled the criminal prosecutions or lack thereof that led to looting in Chicago early yesterday.
It does not serve us to have dishonest blame games when all of our hearts are breaking by what we are seeing.
Fox criticized for not prosecuting other looters arrested earlier this summer during protests sparked by the death of George Floyd. Police Superintendent David Brown saying looters are emboldened since there are no consequences, while Mayor Lightfoot said looters need to be held accountable and not cycled through the system. The Secret Service revealing more details about Monday's shooting near the White House. The agency saying a 51-year-old man approaching a uniformed officer near the White House complex and telling him he had a weapon. The suspect ran toward the officer and took something out of his clothing in a drawing motion. The Secret Service officer then fired his weapon, hitting the man in the torso after he took a shooter's stance. Both the suspect and officer were taken to the hospital. The shooting put a brief pause on the president's coronavirus briefing when he was rushed out of the room suddenly. President Trump, meanwhile, talking about the state of the stock market, saying while there are still hardships economically due to the pandemic, there are also hopeful signs.
The Dow Jones and the S&P 500 are now 50% above the March level. NASDAQ is setting new records.
At the White House, the president explained the U.S. has created 9 million jobs in the last few months. He also added there have been positive signs in the housing and auto industries as well. Jim Forbes says the president is once again also raising some serious concerns about mail-in voting this year.
During a briefing, Trump noted a story in Virginia where incorrect information was printed on absentee ballot applications and mailed to over 500,000 voters.
500,000 incorrect absentee ballot applications were sent all across the state of Virginia, including to many dead people.
He called it an unprecedented mailing flub and added it raises concerns about the integrity of expanding mail-in voting.
Joe Biden's pick for his vice presidential running mate is still a mystery, but there is speculation he could make the announcement as soon as today. The presumed Democratic nominee saying months ago he'll choose a woman, and many people expect him to pick a woman of color. California Senator Kamala Harris and former National Security Advisor Susan Rice are seen as the two top contenders. A huge windstorm blasting across the Midwest yesterday, knocking out power and leaving behind a trail of damage. The storm blowing up in eastern Nebraska, spreading damage all the way to Ohio, in what one meteorologist called one of the nation's worst weather events so far this year. Wind gusts, by the way, reaching 90 to 100 miles an hour in parts of Iowa, trapping people in buildings and cars. At least one person was hurt in Omaha, Nebraska, where 57,000 homes and businesses lost power. The Omaha Public Power District says some might not have electricity until Wednesday. 1 week after Tropical Storm Isaias hit the New England area, and still tens of thousands of Connecticut residents are without power. Eversource saying as of yesterday, roughly 90% of customers have been restored, and they're defending their response to the storm amid criticism from Connecticut leaders.
When you look at historic storms, this response isn't slow. This will get finished with this storm in less time than Superstorm Sandy and Irene.
A representative from the utility company is saying the remaining customers are expected to be back on by later today. Roughly 900,000 customers were left in the dark when the storm hit. Two people were killed. Rick Halschall tells us that Florida is now reporting its lowest single-day total of new COVID-19 cases since late June.
The state added 4,155 new infections, bringing the statewide total to nearly 537,000. There were 91 new coronavirus-related deaths announced, with the death toll among Florida residents now at 8,277. Nearly 7,000 coronavirus patients are currently hospitalized in Florida. Overall, the state's had over 30,700 hospitalizations due to the virus.
And finally, in our news segment, at almost 14 minutes past the hour on this Tuesday, August 11th, the Feast of St. Clair of Assisi. Pray for us. Be sure to look up at the sky tonight, because a Perseid meteor shower is expected to be the most popular one of 2020. The meteor shower most visible starting this evening into the early morning hours of tomorrow, of Wednesday. However, the experts say the brightness from the quarter moon is going to bring visibility down just a tad. A little bit more about this in connection to, yep, a Catholic saint. Who knew? We'll have a little bit more on that later in the program. Right now, again, we have to take a break. 14 minutes past the hour, so we have plenty of time for our friend Steve Ray, author, speaker, convert, pilgrimage leader, and how he came not only to understand but really believe in the teachings of our Blessed Mother that the Catholic Church gives us. This morning, concentrating on, because of the month of August, the Feast of the Assumption. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners. We'll be right back.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. If you're facing uncertainty with your current healthcare plan, now is the time to join CMF Curo. You can join any time during the year, and CMF Curo offers flexible Catholic healthcare solutions for individuals, families, and employers. CMF Curo is your personal healthcare advocate. Contact them today at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
We're having a wonderful feast of St. Clair of Assisi. Steve, you and I know Assisi very well. Beautiful town in Umbria. And wow, the Basilica of Santa Chiara, so gorgeous. Let's talk about that just for a second before we talk about Our Lady. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Yeah, I miss the international travel. We were just talking about that before we came on live.
Yeah.
And people are afraid, and it's going to take a while before travel gets ramped back up again. I know you're doing some local trips, like up to Mackinac City. I think that's excellent. I really commend you for doing that, Teresa. I think it's great. Our next trip that we have planned for Israel is April 7th.
Wow.
Unbelievably. But that's because I know that Israel's closed, and it's I don't expect it to be open for a while. So we had to move our 2020 trips forward. We moved them forward into 2021. But our next trip will be April 8th is the first one we got on. It's already a sold-out bus, and April 28th also a sold-out bus. But we're going to have two buses, so anybody that wants to go, we still have room for you. But it is sad, and Assisi, it's one of our favorite places, too. It's just so beautiful. Once you get to Assisi, even if you're there 2 days, which is the way I do it now.
Yes, that's the only way to do it. Yeah,
it's still not enough time.
Right. What's nice about going in for 2 days is you have, because most people, they treat it like a day trip. And then that, I mean, if they only have a few days, let's say if they're over there only in that area, or if they're in Rome, it's about a two-hour drive from Rome. But you go there, you see the main sites, you know, the angel, St. Mary of the Angels, St. Clair, the Basilica of St. Francis, and then you head out of Dodge. But there's so much more, and there's so much to being there overnight when the tourists leave and you have that peace and the beautiful valley of Umbria before you.
Yeah, you've got to see the life of St. Francis and St. Clair while you're there. And like the down below, the Porta Cunz, I can never say that word.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Where the cross spoke to St. Francis, and then you get to go see his hermitage up in the hills. That's beautiful.
Oh, we did that. That was amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
We've done that every time. And then there's a beautiful winery there that we go to and have the wine and tasting thing. So it really, to be in Assisi for one day is just not enough. And there's so many things to see where Francis was put in prison by his dad because he was going to spend all his dad's money. And so he thought, my son's gone crazy. I'm going to put him in this prison for a while. But you have to see all of those. And if you're there only a day, you get a chance to see some of those major things. But then you don't get to enjoy just being in Assisi for a while.
Mm. It's so important to encourage people, to get back and, God willing, eventually traveling again to the Holy Land, to Rome. Across the country, everywhere we can go to see God's beautiful earth and also the history of the church, which is everywhere. I was even telling our listeners the top of the hour. I know we have to get to our topic at hand, but even in northern Michigan, there's so much information regarding the church, the history of the church, and the Jesuits and the missionaries. And St. Anne's on Mackinac Island, the parish is 350 years old. I mean, the influence of the Catholic Church.
Like a hut.
Yeah.
It's a very cool hut to go into. And I really applaud Michigan for maintaining that Catholic history that we have there and maintaining that little hut made out of wood sticks and things where the early Christians met with the Indians. I think it's marvelous.
Well, let's talk what else is marvelous is Our Lady and to learn more about her. And I know that this is something near and dear to your heart, which is why you wanted to talk to us this morning about the upcoming Feast of the Assumption.
Yes, where do you find that in the Bible? Anyway, this was all new to Janet and I, of course, when we became Catholics, this whole idea of Mary being assumed into heaven and made the queen. But it was once we understood it, and I have to say, Teresa, like I said to so many times, that the Bible made me become a Catholic, and I learned more about Mary from the Old Testament in a way than I did from the New Testament. So the Old Testament was rich with meaning about Mary and who she is and what she is. And because Mary understood her Bible, she understood those things too. She understood herself from the Old Testament, which they would have at the time called the Law and the Prophets. But yes, to discover in my movie on Mary, I have a movie called Mary, Mother of God, where I go to all of these places and explain and defend the doctrines of Mary. I say that as a convert, I came to accept the truth that the truths about Mary were not only true, but they were beautiful.
Wow. In terms of the Assumption, where do we find references to this? Because we know that there is nothing that says specifically Mary was assumed. But we also know, based on just our own church history and history in general, that if you look at all the different saints, you have tombs, you have relics, you have so much evidence of where they lived and how they lived, altars built over, where they're buried, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, I love to ask people, especially when I'm on a pilgrimage and we're at one of these Marian sites, I'll just kind of off the cuff just say, where do we find the relics of Mary? Where are the relics of Mary kept, her bones and her... And people look at me for a minute and they go, well, wait a minute. Mary was assumed into heaven. She didn't leave her bones behind. And I'll say, very good, but I wanted to make the point because the fact is that all the saints, we know where their bones are. Barnabas's bones are on the island of Cyprus. The bones of Peter are in St. Peter's in Rome, Paul outside of Rome. We know where the bones of these people are. But Mary never had bones left behind, and there's no church or city that claims to have the relics of Mary. Just think the screaming silence of that. The very fact that no church ever claimed, wouldn't it be great to be able to say, we have the bones of Mary in our altar, and here I have a relic of the bones of Mary. Nobody has ever claimed that. Why? Because Mary's bones were never left on the earth. They were taken up into heaven. And that in itself alone is an amazing fact, that there was silence about anything related to Mary's relics. And I would have always asked a Catholic, back in my old days, if I was sitting on a plane and I had a Catholic sit next to me prior to my conversion, you say that Mary, so today's the feast day of Mary's Assumption into heaven. Yes. So, well, where do you find that in the Bible? And the poor Catholic would always just fumble and stumble around because, first of all, it's a false assumption that everything we believe has to be found explicitly stated in the Bible. First of all, that's the case. And you could do that also with the Trinity. Where do you find the Trinity? The word Trinity is not in the Bible. So you could actually say the same thing. Where do you find in the Bible the Trinity? The Trinity is never explained in the Bible, nor is the word Trinity used. Or for a Protestant, where the rapture? Where's the word rapture used? Show me the rapture. No, it's not in the Bible. It was never taught for the first, only 180, 150 years ago by Protestants. So the question, when somebody says to me, Teresa, where do you find that in the Bible, and it's used for a trick like that, the way you respond back is simply to say this. Where in the Bible do you see that you have to find everything in the Bible? Never is there any place in the Bible that says that the only thing you can believe as a Christian has to be found explicitly in the Bible.
Usually the response is, or the verse in Timothy where it says all Scripture is good for teaching, and you know, that verse.
Then that
right.
excludes the New Testament because right. Paul was referring to the Law and the Prophets. He wasn't referring to the New Testament. It wasn't written yet. It wasn't even collected for another 400 years. So
also, we wouldn't disagree with that all Scripture is useful for teaching
right.
and for living your life.
Right.
So that doesn't prove that everything has to be in the Bible. It just says that Scripture is very important in our lives, and the Church would totally agree with that.
It's inspired by God, and it's helpful and good for reproof and correction and education and all of those things. But to say that something has to be found explicitly in the Bible before you are going to believe it is to deny the teaching of the church. And for Protestants, the index of their New Testament is not found in the Bible. How do they know that there's 27 books in the Bible to begin with? They're making a great leap of faith based on the teachings of the Catholic Church, which collected the Bible. But anyway, having said all that, where do you find Mary and the Assumption in the Bible? Well, I went back to the Old Testament because this is where I think it's the Old Testament is so ripe with typology and illustrations that give us this information. So when the angel came to Mary in Nazareth, before there was a New Testament, he said that you're going to be the mother of a son who will sit on the throne of his father David. Well, that is very powerful that she's going to be the mother of the king. And I hear the music, so we'll carry on after.
Good for you. I don't have to interrupt you. I'm so proud of you. We'll be right back. More with Steve Ray on the Assumption of Mary on a Tuesday morning, August 11th. So many beautiful feast days in this month, and we'll share as many of them with you as possible. Stay tuned.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
Where does darkness dwell? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness?
What we can see of the cosmos is only one-tenth of the mass needed to explain stable spinning galaxies. Science's answer? Massive amounts of dark matter, or stuff we can't see. But the gravitational force of all that dark matter would cause the universe to shrink and collapse. Except the universe is not collapsing, it's expanding. How is that possible? Science's answer? Dark energy. And just like that, the Earth was saved. And just exactly what is dark matter and dark energy, and where does it come from? We have no idea. But God knows. And one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
If I discipline consistently, I'd be disciplining constantly. If I were consistent in my discipline, that would mean I would discipline more, and I'd be disciplining him often. The exact opposite is the case. More consistent discipline leads to less constant discipline. Why? Because you're predictable. The child knows if he does A, you'll do B. That is why, when you are predictable in your authority, you will actually have to use that authority less. Consistent discipline leads to less constant discipline. The more you act when you need to act, the less you will have to act in the future with similar misbehavior.
Minutes past the hour. It is a Tuesday morning, August 11th. Steve Ray with us, author, speaker, convert to the faith, pilgrimage leader, talking about the Assumption of our Blessed Mother. Steve, in terms of the church teaching, this is somewhat relatively new in terms of the teaching of the Assumption. Let's talk about that. And new in terms of church history.
Yeah, well, it's new in the sense that it was dogmatically defined, but it's not new in the sense that it was believed.
Right.
It's been believed since the very beginning, but it's new in the sense that the Pope finally decided that it was necessary, that what the Church already universally believed and had universally believed as true from the beginning be now codified and put into dogmatic form. So that's when he said, having completed the course of her earthly life, Mary was assumed body and soul into heavenly glory. And he's just saying what the Church has always believed, we are now going to make clearly stated and so that everyone understands it. That was done on November 1st of 1950. But there's a really good book called Mary of Nazareth, and it's by Ignatius Press, by a guy named Hessmann, a German historian and journalist. And it goes through the whole archaeological and tradition of history that Mary was, at the end of her life, he was in Ephesus with John, because John was the bishop of Ephesus, the apostle, and Jesus had given Mary to live with John, and it said from that day forward she moved into his home, says that in the book of John. So he would have come back in 49 A.D., John would have returned from Ephesus to Jerusalem for a council. There was a big council in Jerusalem. Acts chapter 15, if you want to read it. Acts chapter 15, and it took place in 49 A.D. And I believe that Mary returned from Ephesus with John. At that point, the daughter of Jerusalem returns to Jerusalem. She doesn't want to end her days in a pagan country like Ephesus. She comes back to the land of her fathers, and that she died in the upper room area, and that there's that church of the Abbey of the Dormition, and there's that beautiful statue of Mary laying there looking up into heaven as she dies, and there's a picture there of Jesus carrying her. You always see pictures of Mary carrying Jesus, but this one's unusual, Jesus carrying Mary, taking her up to heaven. And the story goes that the disciples then took her down to the Kidron Valley. And in the Kidron Valley, there's a church. In fact, we were just there in February. We took a group there, and it's called the Church of the Tomb of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
That Mary died, of course. Now we've got to deal with the issue that because there was no sin, she was not subject to sin and death, but she chose to die to relate to her son and to all of us. And that's the teaching of John Paul II and most of the doctors of the church. And that she was buried there in the Kidron Valley. It's a Greek Orthodox church, which was formerly Catholic, called the Tomb of Mary, but also the Church of the Assumption. And there is a slab there, which is, you can go in and you can touch it and you can pray there where Mary was laid. And it said that Thomas was not there when the disciples prepared her for burial and put her there. And when Thomas came back, he said he wanted to go to visit. And when they went there, she was gone. And later, some other Christians in other parts of the world wrote to the Bishop of Jerusalem and asked if they could have some of the relics of Mary for their altars, and the Pope wrote back and said, we're sorry, but Mary was not, she is taken into heaven body and soul, so there are no relics of Mary. So that's kind of the end of her earthly life. That is how, and that's how I put it in my movie on Mary called Mary, Mother of God. I go to these places, and that's how I describe the end of Mary's days.
Now, inside the city of Jerusalem, and we've been there many times, there's also the beautiful Church of the Dormition. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, that's up on top of Mount Zion, which is even today the main area for the Jews. Mount Zion, Zion is a synonym for Jerusalem. In the poetry of Israel, you say God lives in Zion. He lives on his holy hill of Jerusalem. So those mean the same thing. But on the hill, this special hill called Zion, there is a beautiful German Benedictine church called the Abbey of the Dormition, and that marks the place where Mary fell asleep. And so in the upper part of the church, it doesn't commemorate that so much. You know, it's just a beautiful church. But when you go down below in the grotto, that's where the body, they have this beautiful wooden statue of Mary laying there. And she's looking up, by the way. If you look up to where she's looking, there's a mosaic above her with Jesus in the center and six of the holy women around in the mosaic that prepared the way for Mary, that were her heroes. Mary had saints and heroes that she had too. You know, we don't think about that. But Mary had saints. She looked up to Hannah and Sarah and Deborah, all these, and Eve even. You know, Eve is a saint today. Adam and Eve are saints. Their feast day is December 24th. And these are the six of those. The Catechism says that many of the women of the Old Testament prepared the way for the Blessed Virgin Mary. They were her heroes and saints. So on the Mount, the hill of Mount Zion is Mary there, and that's reminds us that she fell asleep there, or dormition. You know, Catholics don't say when they buried people in the catacombs. The Romans, it was called a necropolis, the city of the dead. Christians called it cemetery, which means sleeping place. Mm-hmm. And we didn't say we buried them. We said we deposited them, because when you deposit something in the bank, what do you expect to do later? Go back and make a withdrawal. So when you deposit a body in a grave in the ground, it's not burying them forever. You're depositing them because God's going to come back and make a withdrawal at the end of time. So when they prepared Mary for her burial, the withdrawal took place a lot sooner than they expected. She was taken up by, and there's Old Testament precedent for this, Teresa. People say, well, how can God do that? I mean, it's just Mary's dead like everybody else. Well, not everybody else died and went to the ground. Enoch, in Genesis chapter 5, it says Enoch walked with God. He was a friend of God. He walked with God, and he was no more because God took him.
Mm-hmm.
And Elijah,
right,
also, in a whirlwind, a chariot
right.
of fire.
Chariot.
He went up
yep.
into mm-hmm. heaven, body and soul. So we already have a precedent. And if God does that for Enoch and Elijah, what's the big deal if he does it for his son?
Right. Beautiful. So which film would you recommend that you've done? Which documentary, which video would be good for folks to get a more deeper understanding of the church's teaching on the Assumption of Our Blessed Mother? Which
well,
would be a great thing to do this weekend, because that's when it's
it
coming
would.
Up
it would
on the 15th.
It would be a great thing to do. And
yeah.
kids love it. I fall in the mud. I climb trees. I do a lot of fun things in this movie, but I have 9 of them made so far. This one's called Mary, Mother of God. It's on my website, catholicconvert.com. And you can buy the whole set. You get one free. And every one of them has a complete study guide in it, too. So you can do a very complete study guide of Mary from the beginning, Old Testament, New Testament teachings of the church, the whole thing. It's all in there, Mary, Mother of God, in the Footprints of God series. And we do talk about this from Ephesus and from the island of Patmos, because that's where it says John looked up into heaven and he said, "Behold, I saw the woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head." Who is that woman that John saw in heaven? That was Mary, assumed into heaven as the queen. And why do you think John got that revelation? I love to think it this way. You know, Jesus gave John the job of taking care of his mother, Mary. And John was just a young man, I think, in his teens. And so he did this job very seriously. And then after Mary went up into heaven, you know, John didn't have Mary there anymore with him. And I think that Jesus gave John that special revelation to say, "John, you want to know where Mom is? Look at her, John. She's up here in heaven now. She's clothed with a sun, with a moon under her Aww. Feet, and a crown of 12 stars.
Beautiful.
Thanks for taking care of Mom, John. Thanks."
Amen. Beautifully said, Steve. Thank you so much for sharing your deep understanding of the beautiful teachings of the Church on Our Blessed Mother. CatholicConvert.com. Check out those videos he mentioned. Be a great homeschooling type of a class you could do with your family for each other to learn more about Our Lady. Another great saint we're going to discuss this week, the feast day coming up later on, Maximilian Kolbe.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is? Go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge them and to say, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders, this afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
I wrote a new book called Wheat and Tares as a way to approach the sexual abuse crisis by clergy in the Catholic Church. I hope that this book would be something that came out of my prayer for a lot of months and would be able to help inform your prayer.
Wheat and Tares, Restoring the Moral Vision of a Scandalized Church by Father Mitch Pacwa. Now available at EWTNRC.com.
Saints to talk about. I love the saints so much. I even wrote a book about them a few years ago, Girlfriends and Other Saints, if you want to check it out. We can learn so much from them. And we think that, you know, somebody can't understand what we've been through or what it feels like to be rejected or persecuted in some way, although many of us will probably not go through the same type of persecution, especially the persecution of someone as amazing as St. Maximilian Kolbe. But there are saints for everything, for every day, and saints that can certainly identify with whatever suffering or whatever we may be experiencing. And that's why I'm very excited about this book from our friends at Sophia. And it's a different type of book, I have to say, because of the way it looks when you first look at it. It's different. You might get the impression from the cover, which is very unique in this beautiful image, though, of St. Max, that it is a more or less a children or a young person's book. But Michael Lichens with Sophia Press is going to tell us that it's not. It could be for teens and those maybe in middle school, maybe 12, 13-year-olds. But what a beautiful book. Michael, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Thanks, Teresa. It's great to join you all.
All right. So tell us about this particular book about the great St. Maximilian Kolbe, whose feast day we celebrate this month.
So this one is what's called a graphic novel, which I was talking a bit about the break. It's seen a resurgence. It's using the comic book format to tell a serious or dramatic story. And in this case, probably one of the most dramatic stories of the 20th
mm-hmm.
century
yeah.
of St. Maximilian Kolbe. And it uses very, I would say the author, as someone who loves the genre, uses a very evocative art. That's a throwback to the 90s and 80s comic book style that many of us grew up with. And it's a very graphic. It does not hold back. It shows you exactly what Maximilian Kolbe went through. And that can be a bit of, at least when I first read through it, and even knowing about Kolbe's life and suffering, it was still a punch in the gut to see all those images and the dramatic way he presented it all.
Hmm. Why is it important, do you think, to present it in this particular way, with these types of images?
I think it's important because that's how we've always told saint stories. We've often used images and pictures, but more than that, we've used the different artistic expressions around us, whether it was passion plays in the Middle Ages or cinema is a little bit more known to us now. And this type of genre can make us re-look at the life if we've heard it many times before or if we've never heard it before. It can present it in a very dramatic and memorable way.
What's so incredible about the story of St. Max, and today is a feast day, by the way, as you know, of St. Clair, and she's another saint for the media, but so was he in terms of what he did with the Michelet Immaculata and founding a religious magazine and also doing, you know, radio broadcasts or radio transmissions. So he was very much leading up to his sacrifice in Auschwitz, and he was very much a communicator of the faith.
He really was. I was delighted to learn while researching for this graphic novel that he even operated a ham radio station, which is still run to this day by the militia. And he embraced any of the new media he could, whether it was radio or starting one of the largest publishing houses in continental Europe, where he proceeded to produce free materials for people as far away as Japan. So in a way, this graphic novel is keeping up with what even he laid the foundation for.
Yeah. What do you hope in terms of the audience at your outreach? Whom are you targeting for this, Michael, do you think?
We're targeting mostly older children and teens, particularly anyone who is familiar already with comic books and has had a taste for them and wants a way to look at the saints through a format they're familiar with. But I also aim it at anybody who, I don't know about you all, but my attention span has been murdered by the last few months just with all the chaos going on.
Yeah.
And I find that this is a very easy thing to read, you know, one page at a time and still take a lot in.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the trauma, though, of seeing these images, I guess if we think about what we're exposed to on an everyday basis, even without taking in a lot of just violence, if you're not going after a violent form, heaven forbid, of media, you see so much violence day after day just because of how images come to us 24/7. What do you think in terms of, do parents need to talk to, let's say, if they have children who are, I don't want to say children, but teens even might find this a little bit much to take? What do you think?
Honestly, even if your kids are in the 20s, it's never too late to have this conversation because especially violence can be desensitizing. And in our world, and sometimes it can just go right over our head. In this particular case, I do think you need to talk about that this was a suffering, the sufferings of a person who lived and had to go through this for a higher cause. And what we're trying to do is not necessarily, we're not focusing on any of the suffering when we depict it or when we are talking about it. We're not doing it for entertainment. I'm not talking about Auschwitz to entertain or give anybody some type of joy. I'm doing it so that we understand exactly what someone went through.
And what happened in that period of time at that place, and it's unbelievable that some of this is being denied in so many circles still.
It's being denied, and also even the worst, almost as insidious as the denials are the people who try to understate it, to say, oh, it wasn't that bad, it was just a work camp at Auschwitz or whatever. And you look at where Maximilian Kolbe died in cell block 11. I can't imagine how moving that is. It was initially for starvation of people. So this isn't even like, you know, a refugee camp or anything that people might want to excuse it as. This is a death camp, pure and simple.
Yeah. We're talking with Michael Lichkins from Sophia Institute Press and this beautiful book, Maximilian Kolbe, The Saint of Auschwitz. So tell us about the author.
The author is a very delightful artist and writer named Jean-Frico Vibert. This was originally published in French and has been translated. He's done a lot of different graphic novels in the French language. Most famously, he's adapted Agatha Christie into graphic novel form, so he has a couple of Hikaru Perot. But a couple of years ago, he started doing biographies of the saints in this format. Being the devout man that he is, he wanted to tell the story in a format he's already been writing in and working in. And so when we were approached to translate it in English and distribute through North America, it's very new for us, but at the same time, it just seems so perfect for our audience.
I love the lives of the saints. I think we can learn so much from them. And I think in the world and in all the different types of suffering we're seeing so much of now, and people are very anxious, I think reading about the saints and learning about them and what gave them strength can really, I think, do the same for us, give us a lot of strength.
Absolutely. And one of my favorite parts of the way the author tells this story of Maximilian Kolbe is talking about how Maximilian Kolbe was so impacted by so many of the great saints. St. Paul Mickey stood out to me in particular, and how, in a way, those saints had not only inspired him to start going on his path to the priesthood, but also further inspired him when he went through the various sufferings throughout his life and even to the end to continue to go on. And so I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. And, of course, his relationship with the Blessed Mother, and so beautiful that his feast day is so close to the Assumption of Our Lady. We're talking about this new graphic novel from our friends at Sophia, Maximilian Kolbe, The Saint of Auschwitz, and you can get it through our EWTN religious catalog, also sophiainstitute.com. Really well done. And I'll tell you, Michael, going to Auschwitz and seeing this and the psychology, the twistedness of those who were imprisoning and killing those in the concentration camps, it's just so brutal and evil the way they made them. One of the things, and they do such a great job when you go there, it's so respectful, and it's just they constantly tell you that you are on sacred ground, and then they take you to the cell of Saint Max, and it's almost so overwhelming you can't even breathe. But I'm so glad that we have these reminders of what people went through and how they suffered, and in his case how he literally gave his life for a Jewish man who was a father and a husband.
Yes, and someone he didn't even know.
No,
he laid down
right.
his life for a stranger at the very end, which I can't even begin to imagine, but I hope I can understand.
Yeah. So will you be doing more of these types of books at Sophia, do you think?
That's the hope. I really do hope so, because I think the genre is very powerful, especially for those of us who might have read so much about the saints' lives that they can become a little too familiar. Something like this can really remind you of just what they went through and what they laid down to be saints.
Is there anything new that you learned about St. Max that makes you really love him even more in terms of his sacrifice, his commitment to Christ and the church and sacrificing for other people? Any new little tidbit that you came across in this book?
A couple tidbits for me. I kind of sort of knew this, that he's saying that he led people within cell block 11 to sing songs while they were starving to death. I had no idea how much he kept it up, and also had no idea how much it infuriated the guards that they would sing the Salve Regina while they were supposed to be starving to death. And that, I still can't, but that's when you talk about the peace that surpasses all understanding.
Right.
Yeah, I just cannot understand that, and I don't know if there is understanding of it.
Yeah, it's almost too much, and you think about the strength and his dedication to all things God and his love of the Blessed Mother and how she no doubt was there with him. Thanks for doing this, and again, how do we get the book?
You can go to SophieInstitute.com, or you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and your local Catholic bookstore.
All right, Michael, thanks so much. And also, of course, we'll have it at the EWTM Religious Catalog as well. Maximilian Kolbe, whose feast day we also celebrate this week in the month of August, the Saint of Auschwitz. And it's brought to you by our friends at SophieInstitute.com. It is a Tuesday morning when we come back talking a little bit more about another saint we're celebrating this week. So many in the month of August. San Lorenzo, St. Lawrence, patron of deacons, cooks, comedians, the poor, and his connection with the stars in the heavens. A little bit about that when we come back on a Tuesday morning edition. You're listening to Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. Find us both online, AveMariaRadio.net and EWTN.com, of course. And again, the book, Maximilian Kolbe, The Saint of Auschwitz, from our friends at Sophia Press. We'll be right back.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Welcome back. Hope you're having a beautiful Tuesday morning, the feast of St. Clair of Assisi, patron saint of television. Pray for us. You know, there's so much beautiful Catholic history and celebrations around the world, and our faith, I think so many of us, and I put myself at the top of that list, don't know enough about it. Every time I learn something, I say, wow, we could study the faith every single day of our lives and still just begin to scratch the surface. Now, you know that I have a big place in my heart for Italy, and because that's where my heritage is from, and because, of course, of the Vatican and our church being located there. And there's so much dedication to the saints, and there's still those roots there. Even though there are many Catholics who are Catholic in name only in Italy, they still have this reverence. It's very interesting. I think that's something on which we can build when we're over there, if we ever get a chance to have a conversation with Italians. I have tried this and talked to them about it. There still are the roots there of their faith and the love for the saints, and especially the love of our Blessed Mother. Well, the Night of San Lorenzo, as it's called, Notte di San Lorenzo, Catch a Falling Star Under the Italian Sky. We're going to place this article on the latest installation, which is coming out tomorrow, of my new free Positivity Movement newsletter. We're calling it Tea's Tea Time, a cup of inspiration to warm your heart and soul. The whole idea is to help you look at the true, the beautiful, and the good. Not to bury our heads in the sand again or to think that we don't have problems in the world. That's not what we're trying to say. But trying to help you, as it says in Philippians, remember what is good and what is noble. And to think about that, as St. Paul tells us. And the saints, as we just heard with Maximilian Kolbe, the Queen of All Saints, our Blessed Mother, with Steve Ray, they are really just such a great wealth of beauty for us. And in Italy, they have, I think every single day there is a celebration of a saint. There's some sort of a feast day. And this time of year, the shooting stars in the sky, I heard the story, I'm sure, if you're listening the whole hour, about the meteor shower that occurs all over the planet at this time of year. Everyone could see it from various parts of planet Earth. And in Italy, apparently, some of the skies have a red hue to them for this meteor shower. And they occur at the same time of the Feast of San Lorenzo. Now, St. Lawrence was a patron saint of deacons, patron saint of cooks, because he was grilled, literally placed on a gridiron, and also of comedians, because he was joking with those who were basically killing him, saying, turn me over and eat, I'm done on this side. And it is said that in Italy, the night of St. Lawrence, or the night of the shooting stars, is one of summer's most awaited and beloved events. When people gather outside in parks and squares at the beach or on the mountains to admire the night sky and hopefully catch a falling star so you can say a prayer or make a wish. And they usually peak right about now, these falling stars, in the annual, as you heard the news, Perseids meteor shower, reaching its peak in mid-August. They've been referred to, these showers, as the Tears of St. Lawrence in the Catholic tradition because of his feast day and the martyrdom of the seven deacons in Rome. So I'll have more on this on Tease Italy, which you can find at teresatomeo.com/inspiration. St. Max, St. Lawrence, Our Lady, pray for us. Talk to you tomorrow on a Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.